gonna be gone, because now they're already, they're half grown and they're splitting at the top. Nothing can stand 12 inches of rain.
No, well, I like it, you know, I like them with collards or any green.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, I eat them just out of a jar half the
time. I make green tomato pickle sandwiches.
I like them that way. I like
put a little mayonnaise on it.
Sandwich or something.
Amy makes some of the best bread and butter pickles.
Do it.
And I just eat them out of the jar with a spoon.
I don't have the patience to be in the kitchen to can anything else. But it reminds me of Miss Beattie, who taught it to my grandmother. Miss Beattie was 13 or 14 years old.
Well, now you know what I'm talking about, this stew. You can't speed that recipe up.
Wouldn't want it.
No, but you'd be surprised if you would get that recipe somebody. I can do this. I don't have to soak it this much time. I don't really have that. It don't need that. You put brown sugar or white sugar?
Brown.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I bet you if you give it to 10 people, half of them would substitute it with white sugar.
You don't do that.
Well, I'm just telling you, you don't. That's the same thing with the stew. You don't.
And it better be apple vinegar, too.
Right.
But you don't do that white. Some people will do that.
Uh-huh.
No, you don't.
That's what I'm saying. But you give that recipe to 10 people and ask them to make it, and I'll be willing to bet you that half of them change it. They put white sugar instead of brown sugar. They'll go downtown, buy some old white vinegar, and if they're not careful, they'll buy that vinegar that's not but about 2%. You'd be surprised at the people that have lost their canning because they tried to can with this cheap vinegar, not realizing that it wasn't, 5.5% or 7% acidic,
right.
And everything they can is spoiled.
Right. You don't see it. And they got to be real firm. You don't want something that's starting to turn the least bit red. They get mushy when it turns into when it's pickled.
Right.
If it's just even a little bit of that pink on the inside.
Well, I don't want to overload your system now, but you say you don't do it but once a year.
Well, I can't resist if I've offered good tomatoes. I didn't have as many as I make about 30 quarts. And this year, with the drought and everything else, I guess I made 12 quarts.
Well, now, how long do you...
was all I made.
After you bought, can it, how long do you wait before you...
I don't.
I mean, you let it cool and you're ready to go eating? You don't let it sit?
I won't eat it the first day or two.
Right.
But I can't wait after that. I don't give them away till Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I take it to my homecoming, which is the first weekend in November, back home. And I give them away for some for Christmas. And then I just have them for myself into the spring. And by the time, I don't want any left when the red tomatoes are
coming in.
There's a season for everything. And even though I've had them, they last. I don't know how long they last.
I'll last forever.
I think so.
But that's great.
But I do. I've already dipped into my... I had to just check in to make sure it was all right. yesterday, the day before, I went ahead and opened one up.
Yeah, the bad thing about it, or the good thing about it too, but this stew, we do this Saturday night, and then it's a crowd hanging around here Sunday. Everybody, you know, to spend all weekend. And so I ask them. I said, now what y'all want? You know, we make some tomato sandwiches, or we can do this, or we can do that. Oh, we can heat up some stew, and there's always a little barbecue chicken left or some pig. And everybody said, oh, let's eat some more barbecue, let's eat some more brunger stew. And it's always better the next day.
Oh, it's any stew. You bet.
You know, somebody, I declare I can't believe this is what I ate last night. I don't remember tasting quite like this last night. I said, it's always better. I mean, it's the next day. But anyway, well, I'll see that you get a quart, even though you can't be here.
Well, maybe I can bring out those green tomato pickles for you. Yeah, I'd certainly do it for a quart of stew.
But I certainly will let you, I'll save you a quart.
Well, let's get philosophical.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I'm going to, as you might have gathered from the way I talked about the green tomatoes, even if I have an inkling or a notion of why you go all this trouble, I want to ask some almost rhetorical questions, because we got to get down and...
That's no problem.
Why the hell do you go to all this trouble? What do you do all this? I mean, it's a good eat.
Well, you know, my brother asked me the same question last year. He said, this is a lot of work. Why do you do this? And I said, well, I really like good stew. And I've gotten sort of a... a pet peeve of mine about folks doing things. I can go in there and pick up Bon Appetit or any of these food magazines, or you see articles in the paper now on every Thursday about food. And recently they're doing one on pies, homemade pies. Yeah. And the first thing they say is start with a Pillsbury pie crust mix. I said, when did Pillsbury pie crust mix become homemade?
That's right.
And I want to write Bon Appetit and say, I said, don't, or Southern Living,
right.
Don't put a recipe in here and call it homemade. And the first thing you do is you take a Pillsbury pie crust. That don't cut it. You see, and everybody does. And I understand it's the change in times. And everybody's living in such a fast pace that you can't do it. And if you're going to do it, do it. And I'm not saying it's not good. But don't call it what it's not.
Right.
And I want to make Brunswick stew right. I really like it. I reckon I'll eat a quart a month. I think I got 2 quarts left from last year. There's sometimes, the other night, the first night, the temperature dropped down in the 40s, and about 7 o'clock, and Amy said, what do you want for supper? I said, I want a quart of stew. She said, well, that does sound good. And so I went up and got it and came back, and it thaws in about, put it in the microwave, and in about 15 minutes, it's just, all I do is sprinkle a little more pepper in it because it lost some of its kick. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather have it than anything else. And so why I do it, and this other has more or less, I know that when I make this recipe, it's going to be right. I'm not saying that if I made 15 gallons, it wouldn't be just as good as when I make 25. But
right.
I've got everything else down, so why not go on and make the whole recipe?
Right.
Either myself or my brother or my mother, I wouldn't have a problem getting rid of it if I didn't do it. And so if I'm doing that, anyway, the other, I got to be there all day. You're not going anywhere. I throw 2 20-pound bags of charcoal around for the cooked chickens on, and that takes me 5 minutes. And you put the chickens on, close the grill, you don't look at them for an hour. So, and Walter's cooking the pig. So, and I got to be right there with that stew. So I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So that just more or less fits into what you're doing.
Yeah.
But the stew is the main impetus behind it. The pig is so when you got 100 folks, you can't, 25 gallons of stew won't feed 100 people. So, and we always have chicken left, and we have pig left, and we have plenty of stew left. So why I do it is basically I like it. And I get a lot of enjoyment out of telling folks going into the different restaurants. I forgot to tell you one little story. When A&P, you remember the A&P?
Oh, yeah. We had
they used to sell a can of stew. It was not a tall can. But it was a brown can about the size of a small saucer and about 1.5 inches high. And it's POSS apostrophe, Posse's Stew. And I happened to be going by Athens, Georgia one time when I was in the service and turned the curve, and that was Posse's Stew. It was before 85 was built.
Uh-huh.
And they were working on it, but they were doing something. I just taken a little bypass around through Athens, really. So I went into the store. Went in there about late, just before lunchtime, because I was driving to Columbus, Georgia. I said Atlanta, Georgia, Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah.
And so I went in and I told the man I wanted a barbecue sandwich with slaw. And so he came back with a barbecue sandwich with no slaw. I said, don't you have any slaw? I mean, I couldn't. He said, anybody that knows how to eat barbecue doesn't put slaw on it. And I said something to the fire. I said, look, I was eating barbecue cooked outside on a grill. And I see your cookers. Before you could even spell barbecue. And people in North Carolina put slaw on barbecue. Now, if you want me to pay for this sandwich, you put slaw on it. And if you're going to pay for it, I'll eat it without a slaw. And he says, well, what about some Brunswick stew? I said, well, I've never eaten Brunswick stew. I had his Brunswick stew because I tried it in the can. I said, I've never eaten Brunswick stew that's sold commercially that I would fit to eat. So anyway, a customer came in while he went back to put slaw on my barbecue. He brought me out one of those little cups that they put tartar sauce or salad dressing in with the Brunswick stew in it. And when he set it on the counter, you could smell the camel's tomato soup in it. So I got off my seat and took his little thing and walked as far down the counter as I could put it. made a big to-do about putting that stew way down there and came on back and sat down. Of course, he waited on a customer and came back, went in and got the stew and brought it back. I said, don't bring that stuff up here. He says, what'd you do that for? I said, when you put it down, I could smell the camel's tomato soup in it. And I said, anybody that puts camel's tomato soup in Brungan stew don't know what he's doing. And I said, if you would feed that to my dog, he'd bite you. And he just cracked up laughing. He says, well, I got behind today. And I had to take some shortcuts. I said, well, then don't call it Brunswick stew. Somebody would come in here from another state. I said, if people would come in here from where you live, they probably make you close the door. And they never heard of Brunswick stew. And they're going to eat that thinking that's Brunswick stew. They go over here saying, I can't stand it. Don't sell it. If you can't make it right, don't sell it. You wouldn't sell this pig if you burned him.
What's the point of that, though? That's what I'm trying to get at, see, because it's more than just you liking the Brunswick stew.
It's only one way to make it.
It's about it being right that matters more to you than it does to most people.
Because it's not what they say it is, I think. And that follows through in a lot of things that sort of antagonize me. Don't call something one thing if it's not. And somebody has taken Brunswick stew, and they have really just butchered it. And they still call it Brunswick, like the people in Petersburg, Virginia, that are selling vegetable soup. Call it vegetables. Nothing wrong with calling it vegetable soup. Folks, they're going to sell just as much in vegetable soup. Yeah. It might sell more. Because if they've had bad Brunswick stew, they ain't going to try it else.
That's right.
But if they had vegetable soup, that's sort of a cook's escape part anyway. You put anything in vegetable soup.
Yeah.
Do anything you want. So that's it. I think really is I like it, but I want it done right.
Yeah.
I don't buy it from anybody. I hear people tell me all the time, they know I cook brunch. Ben, we having brunch? I said, no, I don't have brunch. Do you know how to cook it? And I get a big kick out of picking. They picking me. Oh, ours is good. I said, no, it's not. You know how to cook it. Well, we know how to cook it. That's the point. I said, well, then cook it. If you know how to cook it right. But so it's sort of a going joke, really,
yeah,
for that craft. And it's edible. I'm not saying it's not good. It's good.
Oh, sure.
And it's far better than any you're going to buy. Because I don't even know what you can buy. I think Star used to be, you go in the food line or the local Winn-Dixie's or stuff like that, you'll see Star's Brunswick stew.
I've seen something in a can.
But, that's it. I basically do it because I do it right. And I think there's something to be said for that. And sort of a challenge each year to do it right. I mean, it does. You start thinking about it. We started thinking about this now a month ago about the invitations and sending this stuff off. There's a lot of work to it. But I get a lot of enjoyment out of somebody eating it.
Yeah.
And saying, we do the same thing at Christmas. We make a homemade fruitcake that you start from scratch. And I've had folks, I say, want a piece of fruitcake? I said, no, I've eaten fruitcake that was any good. I said, I'm going to give you one bite of mine. I ain't going to give you much because you don't know what it is. Oh, well, I never eaten fruitcake like this. I said, I know you haven't. And what you have eaten is not fruitcake. It's cake with fruit in it, but it's not fruitcake. Not an old-fashioned, homemade fruitcake. And the recipe makes 2 15-pound cakes. You got to have great, big bowls.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It's the idea that if you're going to do it right. Also, I do it right. Gray Kern married into the Kern family, and the Kern family she married in, and she told her husband and her brother, said, your daddy makes, y'all make stew, you don't make it as good as this. She says, it's just this is the same. This is it. I mean, that's her particular taste. She likes it. But anyway, basically it's doing it and getting enjoyment out of folks really eating it and appreciating it. And then they go, and they get a lot of miles off of it. They tell me, so, well, what's in this? Let me tell you, so, oh, I wouldn't eat that. I say, well, if you, until you've tasted it, you don't know what you're talking about.
Do you got certain memories of things in the past that come to mind when you're fixing the stew? Does the stew mean more to you than, are there people wrapped up in it? Or that, you see what I'm getting at?
Well, one of the guys that comes is the son, and he's 68, and is the son of Reuben Jones, the one I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
And he said last year, he said, Ben, said, I haven't eaten stew like this since Daddy cooked it. You know, and he was one of the pushers and movers up at Hester Church. Mm-hmm. I said, I know it. I said, and you can make it, and his wife make it. And she said, well, Doug's not going to spend this kind of time. He wants to shortcut it. Mm-hmm. You know, and she's and they still make it. They make one, make it in the house. Big stock pot, holds about 6 gallons, but it's not the same. But he just kept on eating, and he likes crackers with it. I buy crackers, just old plain
saltine
crackers. And I tell him, because first year he bought his own because he didn't figure, because most folks don't serve, but he likes it on crackers. And he would eat it with the cracker. And so I told him, I said, you know what, Frank, I'll have you some crackers.
Yeah.
And but he said, I have eaten it just, you know, since Daddy died. You know, and that, yeah, I sort of feel good about it because it brought up his memory, just the way Daddy did it. And even though he knew, he got the recipe, he knows how Daddy does it, he chose not to do it because of the time involved. And like I tell you, my brother said, why in the world would you go to all this trouble? You know, most folks would put some hamburgers on the grill if you had to feed more than 20 people, stuff like that. So I reckon that's it. I don't know that I can pin it down.
Well, let me ask you about two of the people that you mentioned. Can you tell me more about what kind of man Reuben Jones was?
I can give you some examples, and you sort of have to come up with kind of man. When I would grow up, I'd say, I can ride that mule bareback. He never would want me to ride a mule bareback because nothing to hang on to. And he said, no, you can't. And I said, oh, yes, you can. He would get up on him. So I'd grab, he'd have to, I was a little on the heavy side, hadn't really grown up and probably weighed about as much as I do now. So he'd lift me up. And, of course, what he didn't tell me that I knew now, but when you leave the field at 5 o'clock or at 11 o'clock, really, going to the house, mules will just almost run or horse back to the stable. And of course, we were way on the backside of a big 200-acre farm, and the mule just took off, just wide open running, and I couldn't stop him. It's what they call old big horse mule, great big mule. One of these little, like these little red mules you see, I mean, it was a monster. And I fell off the fool about halfway to the stable. I couldn't stay on him. And he came on along in the wagon with the other one. Said, I told you couldn't stay on him. And, you know, it didn't do me any good to say, well, you didn't tell me he was going to break into a run, and so I won't hold in the lines tight and all this kind of stuff. But he just laughed, and he let you do. He'd tell you one time you couldn't do it. And if you wanted to do it, then
off you go.
Yeah, go ahead and do it. You know, his philosophy was you're going to get hurt doing something that you ain't got no business. I've heard him tell my mother this. So why not let him get hurt doing something that won't maim him or cripple him? Then he'll learn and say, well, you can't do that now. You're going to hurt yourself. And I wanted to go out and play in the rain one time, just raining in the hot summertime, you know, and play at barefoot. He said, no, you just end up cutting your feet or doing something like that. And I said, no. Well, sure enough, I cut the bottom of a big toe on a piece of rusted metal in a water hole. I mean, a bag, just shaved it off. Well, he was fine. That was like the middle of the week. He cleaned it, and I think he put a little, some kind of homemade, something with a little sulfur in it or a little kerosene oil and wrapped it up with an old dirty rag, as my mother said. She came up to get me on Saturday, and she just went ballistic that I hadn't gone to the tetanus. Well, they carried me downtown and gave a tetanus shot. Well, the tetanus, that's when they found I was allergic to tetanus. I can't take tetanus. And I like to die from a tetanus shot. Of course, Uncle Rube said, he was fine. Said, you kill him. You going to kill him. Carried him to the doctor. Went on wrong with it. The scab had already formed. We'd already cleaned it. I mean, he put kerosene oil and something else on it. And so it wasn't a chance of an infection, but they should stop a tetanus shot on you. And then, of course, I'd like to die from the tetanus. It swelled all up, all that kind of stuff. So, and he made his point there.
Yeah.
And like I told you, the expression, you know, he said, can't tell a fool and a child nothing. And that was one of his favorite expressions. And he would let me do just about anything I wanted to do. He'd tell you couldn't do it, but he wouldn't tell you but once.
Was he going to talk you to hunt?
Oh yeah, he hunted and fished every year. He died before I was really big enough that they would let me go. But before they dammed Car Dam on Saturday, his wife would carry him to Stanton, Virginia. And he had an old homemade boat he'd made, just an old wooden boat. No motor. just to paddle. And he would carry flour and some eggs and coffee pot and coffee. And she'd put him in the water in Stanton, Virginia. And she'd pick him up Saturday week in Roanoke Rapids. And he would have wild turkeys, and he'd eat all the squirrels he wanted, and he'd have a deer or two. That was before. That's when they had all the seasons, but he wanted anything around. But it's always been on that river basin.
Yeah.
And he would just float along, and he'd catch fish, and he'd build a fire, and he'd cook whatever he shot or whatever he caught.
He'd take a whole week to do that.
Uh-huh. Take a week just to float the river.
What was this? Like right after the...
That was after he had the crop in.
Laying by? He had the crop in.
That was after he'd sold the tobacco.
Okay.
And this was in November. And usually before hunting season then, I always came in on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And that was before hunting season came in. So he was just, it was his vacation. He had looked after and...
He'd go by himself.
Huh?
Go
by himself.
I can understand that.
And it was just a nice vacation. That was his own vacation. Of course, he always hunted with the neighbors, always hunted with his children, always carried me hunting. And he carried me hunting. First time I went hunting, carried bird hunting, quail hunting. And he would let you fall down and get wet and mash your fingers and mash your feet and do anything, cut yourself because you weren't doing what you were doing right. And why at the same time he'd be watching you. And he wouldn't let you do anything just dumb now and really hurt yourself. But he'd let you do silly things till you got so after in the later years. I said, well, I'd rather tell him what I was going to do. I said, I think I'd go out there and do it. He said, well, now, you think you can do that? And I said, well, anything you can tell me that I ought to look out for. And so then you'd ask him, then he'd tell you. He said, well, yeah, you ought to do this, or you ought to do this. See? So that was the way he was. He raised his son, and he had a daughter. And he's same way with them. I was out there, and we were horsing the bike, and the son had gone out Sunday night. And stayed out all night. And I always slept in the room with him. And he'd get up in the morning, dark, go get a Dr. Pepper, go to the refrigerator and get a Dr. Pepper. First thing, come out, call on the radio. Cut it on wide enough for everybody in the house to know it was time to get up. And didn't read yesterday's paper. Paper always came in the mail. Uh-huh. But he was always busy at night and too tired. So he'd sit down and drink that Dr. Pepper and read the yesterday's newspaper. And then he'd wake everybody up. I was already awake and get dressed because he's going to come wake you up anyway. And so he said, can you reckon you can harness the mule? I said, yeah, don't you want me to get Doug up? He said, Doug ain't here. His wife had died. There wasn't nobody but him and Doug. His older daughter had gone off to nursing school, so it was just those three guys there. And he was doing the cooking. I said, well, where is he? You know, well, he ain't come in. He's dating. He ain't come in yet. So I went on down. Had to put the harness on the mules. Well, first I had to feed them. They'd come in out of the field. I mean, out of the pasture and feed them. And he said, you feed them and get them in the stall and then come on back up here and I'll have breakfast ready. So then he cooked breakfast and he can cook anything for Doug. He just cooked. I said, where's Doug, brother? He said, well, he ain't here. If you ain't here, I ain't cooking for you. So we ate and I helped him. We cleaned up the kitchen. And he said, now go down there and put the bridles on the mules. And he showed me how to say, don't get in the stall with him. Now this one, he'd get hurt. Don't get in the stall with him. Open the door. When he starts out, comes out head first, throw the lines over the mule's neck so you can hold him, and then put the bridle on him. And he says, and if he won't pull his head down for you, most of one of them down there would raise his head up, and I couldn't reach. He said, then you got the lines. You can pull the line straight down, make his head come down, so get the bridle on. So then carry him over to the crib where the harness is, and if you can get the harness on, fine, and if you can't, I'll be down, but at least you'll have him. So anyway, I did. But I could get the harness on. And I was leading him on back up to the house, by the house, going to the barn. And up the driveway came his son, Doug, and had on his suit and been out all night. And Uncle would come on out, and he said, Daddy, said, you give me about an hour or two to sleep, I'll be ready to go. And his daddy said, all I want you to do is change clothes, and come on, Ben will pick you up with the slide in 2 minutes. He said, you can sleep later on. And so then we worked all day. And after supper, he gave Doug the keys. He says, goodbye. And Doug said, what do you mean? He said, don't you want to stay out all night tonight? Doug said, no, sir. I won't stay out tonight. He'd been up all day Sunday and all Sunday night and all day Monday. He said, well, go on. Call her, honey, and tell her you coming home. Say, you be there in a few minutes. And he went, Doug went and called it a bit, because we had to do the same thing on Tuesday we did on Monday. And he slept all day. But that was the way it was. You won't stay out all night, he had a problem with it.
You just got to pay the price.
But you, don't come in here if you won't stay up all night. You knew you had to work, and then you work all day. Damn, if you won't go out Monday night, go ahead. And that's the way it was in his life. He didn't try to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. He tell you what you ought to do.
And that you had to live with
it. And you, right.
What you do. Well, the, one of the last things I want to note, Ben, is can you describe a little better the scene when you were a child at his place and he was fixing stew? Okay? Like if we were going to paint a picture of it.
Uh-huh.
What it looked like? How did, where was it served?
Well, it was always out. Great big oak tree. Big oak tree. I mean, just that shaded probably a fourth of the lot. And he had built a homemade, had taken blocks, something they were literally cinder blocks. They weren't cement blocks like they are today. They were cinder blocks. And had built a pit that you could cook chickens or grill anything on. Yeah. Only such thing as having a grill and charcoal.
Right.
And then that's where he had his, set that pot, wash pot. And that wash pot, literally, when was what they used to wash clothes with. Boil, that's what they had hot water, running water, you had to draw the water out of a well and build a fire, and they wash clothes in it. And if he had any kind of little tinkering to do on anything, he, under that oak tree, had put a chain horse up in it to lift up the tractor or lift up a car or anything you want to change, to work on something, you lift it up, just chain horse, stuff like that. And sort of out of the way, came up the driveway. It was always off to, it's off to one side, so dust and stuff wouldn't get on what you were cooking over there. People wouldn't, on the side of the house, away from the driveway.
Yeah.
So it was a, house was probably 50 yards from the from this place.
And the fields?
And well, it was all from the house set up on a hill, and it was just pasture.
Okay.
About 100 yards wide, straight down to the road, and then the driveway went up the middle of it, and then branched around to the left to go. It went around to the right, but nobody went that way because that's where you went out to all the barns and everything.
Right.
Everybody coming to the house went to the left. That's where you went into the house, that side.
And people ate inside, outside?
No, everybody ate outside, most of the time just standing up.
Yeah.
Paper plates, those divided paper plates. You didn't have anything but stew and slaw.
Mm-hmm.
If you were doing stew, that's what you did.
Don't eat nothing else.
Didn't anything else. And then you just had white bread or crackers.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. And they usually drank an iced tea or beer. And it was always a few of the men who kept whiskey back in the car or in the coat pocket, but it wasn't visibly, it wasn't set up on a table.
Right.
And this is what you come to eat. The iced tea was there, and it wasn't no soft drinks, either iced tea or water, and a few beer. But if you drank beer, you brought your own.
Right.
And it wasn't something that somebody just, the host just had. They weren't expected to feed anybody beer.
Right.
And like I say, there's always some of the older ones that would have small whiskey. They were pint whiskey bottles.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And they would pull that out of the coat pockets or breeches, overalls pockets, something like that.
Still find them behind our barn.
Yeah. still around.
My grandmother's place.
But it was sort of an unwritten law. You know, there's plenty of children now.
Right.
And you wouldn't see somebody's granddaddy or somebody's uncle standing there. They didn't drink liquor around kids.
No.
They'd go off somewhere and pour it in a glass and then put iced tea on it or pour it in a cup. Uh-huh. And you thought they were drinking iced tea, but it wasn't an invisible
right.
show
right.
Of hard liquor. Right. I mean,
and the women didn't drink, I assume.
I don't ever remember seeing any of the women drink.
No.
Literally.
I mean,
it wasn't a big to-do about telling them that they weren't going to do it.
No.
I mean, they knew they weren't supposed to be around them children drinking. I mean, the children, I think, knew to drink. I mean, I knew Uncle Reuben would take a drink.
Right.
But he never made a big to-do about it. I never saw him. To my day, I don't ever remember see him pouring himself a drink.
This was like a weekend kind
of
thing?
No, this was just like during the work week. Most of the time, it could be on any night, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
So for Uncle Reuben, this wasn't the stew wasn't like a one-time-a-year kind of thing?
No, no. They would do several.
This was feeding the hands.
Yeah.
But it was a special. It was still a cut above, right? I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Viola and Dorothy. Or the two old maids.
Okay.
Viola and Dorothy Frazier.
Okay. Good.
Now, one of the things, and they never did stews. What they used to love to do, is do homemade ice cream.
Can't go wrong there either.
And they would tell everybody, we're going to have ice cream. And they always did big freezers because they had milk cows and they had chickens. And they would do vanilla and banana. I can't stand banana ice cream to the day, homemade. But they would do vanilla ice cream, banana ice cream. And then if there were strawberries in season, they would do strawberries. Or if the cherries were in season, they would have cherries. And but it's always strawberry or chocolate. They usually do three freezers. And like if they did strawberry ice cream, and they always started with boiled custard. They would take eggs and milk and make boiled custard. And then put that in a freezer. And that was sweet enough to drink like it was.
I was gonna say.
And then they would sweeten the strawberries. And then pour that in there. And then they would always put sugar in that because it was so sweet you literally can almost, and just like velvet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nothing in the world. Because it was milk that they had milked.
Wow.
And it's old great big milk cows with, and no telling how much fat was in it to start with.
Back to Uncle Reuben for just a minute.
Yeah.
So who would be coming?
Be any of the neighbors.
Be neighbors?
Because this wasn't something that they said they could come. He'd see them at the store, or he'd ride up the road that morning going to get some people to help him tend the crop.
Uh-huh.
So I'm cooking a stew this afternoon, 4 o'clock. I mean, we're going to eat stew tonight.
Wow.
I'm cooking a stew today. And, you know, they didn't have anything else to do. They were going to eat supper. And he come by and say, I'm cooking a stew. And if you see so-and-so, tell him I'm cooking. I haven't got time to go by the house, but you'll see him today. Tell him I'm cooking a stew. So it could be anywhere from 10 people to 30 people.
Well, was part of the notion to kind of entice hands to help?
No, this was basically just an excuse to get together.
Yeah.
When everybody's right in the middle of harvesting time, you didn't have time. Everything's done by hand. None of this mechanized stuff the doctor do today. All the bike had to be hand tied and hand put in bonds, none of this book stuff. So this wasn't something that they didn't have any time during anywhere from May until toward the end of August to do anything.
Right.
They worked from way in the dark in the morning until after the black night dark at night and raising the crop. And so this was now. You did have a little free time. I mean, tobacco was out of the fields, and it was in the tobacco barns, and you were curing it, and you just sort of standing around watching it and keeping the fire going. No such thing as oil burners and gas burners. They had to cut wood in February and haul it to the barns, and so they had to keep fires going in furnaces to maintain the heat. So you hung around the barns all the time.
So while they were curing, this was
curing tobacco or finishing up curing tobacco.
Uh-huh.
And so it was. It's the first time really since the spring that anybody hadn't time to do anything.
Yeah.
All of the wives were either canning or tending. Some of them worked, but most of them were just on the farm cooking and putting up vegetables. And so that was it. Most people would hire one or two just day laborers.
Uh-huh.
And there were some people that lived in the community who that's what they did. That's what they did. They were just day laborers. They'd work for me today and you tomorrow, somebody else the next day.
Right.
And load toward the season, you would go to them and say, "Now look, I'm gonna harvest my tobacco every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I would like to hire you for every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday."
Right.
And some would agree to help you. They'd say, "Well, I've already told somebody else I have my Wednesday, but I'll help you every Monday and Friday." Mm-hmm. If somebody had gotten ahead of them or something on Tuesday and Thursday, stuff like that, and if something happens, I'll let you know. And then he'd get up here in the morning, and about 6 o'clock, he'd go get them. And they had already eaten breakfast. And then he'd feed them lunch. And then when we finished in the afternoon, he'd carry them back. He wouldn't finish them. You never fed any of your hired help supper unless you were doing a stew.
Wow.
And then everybody, and of course, everybody knew him, and they were there.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of hang around. Some of them didn't want to stay. Mm-hmm. Well, they had other things to do. That's what they did 5-6 days a week. And they didn't want to hang around. When his job was over, pay me and let me go. So it was basically the neighbors that did it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good smelling place if it had a tobacco cure.
Oh, yeah. You can't beat it. Mm-hmm. Can't beat it.
The last thing I was going to ask, I wanted to know just a little bit more about Ms. Hester. What was her name? Was Hester her first name? The lady at the Baptist church that you got the rest
of. Oh, no, that was Julia Carrington. Sterl Carrington.
I thought Julia was her daughter.
No, she did have a daughter named Julia.
Oh, okay.
But her name was Julia, Miss Sterl. Miss Sterl, her name was Sterl. She married Sterl Carrington.
Oh.
And everybody just called her Miss Sterl Carrington, in other words. But her name was Julia.
Okay.
But Julia was a daughter.
Got it. Well, what was the mama like, a little bit? What
was she was, the husband had tobacco farms. They happened to live in town. Because he also ran a livery stable. And some of his relatives ran a hardware store. Hardware, not like Ace Hardware. Hardware stores then either sold fertilizer, or they always sold fertilizer, and they always sold equipment, harnesses, and stuff that you would use for hand mule stuff, drawn stuff. And then bolts and nails and stuff like that. But not a hardware store like you go into today when it's china and crystal and stuff like that. And it was all mainly for farm use. And so she was just a move in the church and in the community, and
by the time you got your recipe, was she an elderly woman or was she just?
I would say she was probably in her fifties, but she every Christmas, I mean, she would have different Christmas between Thanksgiving and Christmas, she would have. Either a Thanksgiving dinner that she would invite friends in, and she and my mother were good friends, and so she would always invite us out there, my brother and myself and her, to at least a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And at the dining room table, you could seat 16 at. And she was one of the few people that still had her husband cure country hams like they had to be cured. And you never cut a country ham till it was 2 years old. And she would have a great big 30-pound ham after it was cooked on the table. And I mean, that was just, and a turkey. That's one of the first memories I had of what you see in these Southern living, say, where you see a big Thanksgiving Day dinner.
Right.
I mean, nobody would put a whole turkey and a whole ham on her. But that's what they did, and then they would slice it,
uh-huh.
And then pass your plate around, stuff like that. But she made pickles and jams and jellies and canned stuff, gave it away. But that was the way you did it. I mean, they didn't have a real big family. And what she put up, you'd probably feed two families. But she was brought up, that's what you did. You didn't waste food.
If it was in the garden, you were going to go.
In the garden, you went and got it, you know. And if it had too much, then you had it for older times or later times, or you gave away for Christmas presents. That's what Christmas was. You know, you give them, like you give away your pickles for different occasions.
To the deserving.
Uh-huh. She would give her stuff away. You know, you would expect to get some of her pickle or some of her jellies and stuff like that. So that was it.
Well, on that note, maybe we should tend to those tomatoes.
Okay. Sound like a one.
Anything else? Did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
I think we got one.
I mean, you know, that's basically it. The whole thing is around the stew.
Yeah.
And there's enough stuff leading up to it or leading away from it to write one particular. I think you got enough stuff to do something with.
I think we do, too. Though I'm going to be awful, I can't tell you how much it grieves me that I'm not going to be...